discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, and Chuck Wolbers, a transition and work experience teacher in the special education department at Tremper High School, also in Kenosha. Now, here is today's Education Matters moderator.
Literacy teacher at Mitchell Middle School in the Racine Unified School District. Welcome to Education Matters, Lucy.
Thank you.
I have known you for 3 or 4 years, and today it's my pleasure to have you as my guest on Ed Matters. And as a matter of openness, let me indicate that I have been in Ms. Hocking's classroom to read to her students several times, most recently earlier this week. Thank you for that opportunity.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Keeps me in contact with young people. And one of the posters on the wall that I noticed said, "The greatest natural resource that any country can have is its children," and I really like that.
And I believe it.
Okay, that's great. To get started today, tell us a little about your academic background. You have a Bachelor of Science in Elementary Ed and a Master's degree in Reading Adaptive Education. Tell our listeners about your background.
Well, I'm a 3-time graduate of El Verno College in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I started college when my son was about 3 years old, and I graduated with my Associate of Arts degree as an educational assistant in 1998. I went on to complete my Bachelor of Science in 2000 with a major in elementary ed and a minor in social studies. And I also obtained 6 through 9 certifications so I can teach middle school and through junior high. There are still a few junior highs left in Wisconsin. After that graduation, I immediately started working on my master's degree in reading with adaptive education, which took about 5 years because I was caring for my elderly mother and my young son while also teaching full-time. My first year was also memorable as 9/11 occurred and the enormity of responsibility for other people's children fully hit me. I have taught in both public and private schools after I earned my bachelor's degree and my master's, and then I applied here in Racine for a full-time teaching position at Mitchell Middle School as their Title I reading teacher. That was back in 2007. This would be my 15th year teaching, but the 8th year starting in RUSD. And I only have 7 more until retirement.
My, let's not rush that retirement business.
No, I'm not.
You know, but it's wonderful. But what you're doing is really so incredibly important. How did you get into reading? You know, what caused you to go into reading? Because as I think of education, I think that reading is probably one of the toughest areas to deal with.
Well, I went into elementary ed even though I knew I wanted to teach older students, middle school students. And part of that reason is because, and my brother doesn't mind if I share this, but as I was growing up, I had no problems with reading. Math was a bit of a struggle. But my brother is severely dyslexic.
Okay.
And I saw how much he suffered. So now we're talking over 50 years ago. They really didn't know what dyslexia was.
Yes.
Now we know about 1 out of 5 people have some form of dyslexia.
Oh, my.
And he has both an alpha and a numeric dyslexia. So he often reverses numbers and letters. And that's only, you know, a few of the signs of dyslexia. But he is severely dyslexic. And my heart just broke because we didn't know how to help him.
Yes.
He had tutors every summer. He had college students. My mother did everything. They both did everything they could to help him. And it was a middle school counselor and teacher who reached out to my brother. And I think she really, in a sense, almost saved his life. He was able to go on to high school and to be more of an advocate for himself. He found teachers who would give him oral exams instead of written exams. And so I became a reading teacher, really, because I wanted to help him.
So all of those things that teachers did really are part of the repertoire that you use, I'm sure, then in terms of working with reading students, you know, today.
Yes, and we try to get the students to understand they need to advocate for themselves with their other teachers who may not understand their strengths, and also in high school. We're really working in middle school to get them ready for high school.
And that makes me think of, we had a special education person at UW-Parkside in teacher ed when I was there. And one of the things I remember her saying, teach to the students' strengths.
Yes.
You know, and so forth, rather than to their weaknesses. And I think that's good advice for all of us as teachers. So what programs do you use in helping students develop reading skills?
In Racine Unified School District, we have a Scholastic program, two of them. One is called System 44, and that uses the 26 letters of the alphabet and the 44 American English sounds that they make. And Read 180, which is for students who are in more of a middle lexile. So often they complete System 44 and then go on to Read 180, which is really more about fluency. So first they're reading and really decoding. It's very fundamental. You can begin with a beginning
reader.
Those
are the basics.
The basics, beginning reader. And they work up to about a more independent level, approximately 500 lexile level. And then they go on to hopefully work up to the exit level, which would be for each grade, 950 for sixth grade, 1050 for 7th grade, and 1150 for 8th grade, and you're about to ask me what a lexile is.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. I think our listeners would need to know what a lexile is
sure.
So they can follow what we're talking about
sure.
here.
A lexile is a unit of measurement, much like an inch or a centimeter when you're measuring mathematically.
Sure.
A lexile helps measure how comfortably a student or a person can read at a certain level.
Okay.
So it's not too difficult and not too easy.
Okay.
So when the students take a test, we can find out where they're reading at, and we meet the student where they're at, and we give them books that are at their lexile, within their lexile range, which is basically 100 points below to 50 points above their lexile. And that's kind of their zone. Once they start being able to pass comprehension tests and read more fluently, we can bump up their lexile range and their lexile level, working up to those exit levels.
So these programs that you have then from Scholastic give you that kind of information about where each student is, and then you can bump him or her up or move down if you need to do that?
Yes, too. Yes. And as they take comprehension tests after they've read books at their lexile level, once they take the comprehension test, we can tell whether or not if they pass at 70, 80, 90, 100%, we know that they're understanding what they're reading.
Yes.
And they can take a test on it. If they are getting 40s and 50s, they're either reading the book too quickly.
Yes. Okay.
Or not reading it completely.
Ah.
Or it's too difficult for them. And then we would lower their lexile range until they get to that point. So if a student asks if they can read a certain book, I might say not at this time, but you'll get there.
Okay. And so then your program as a Title I reading teacher is very highly individualized because the kids you deal with, like in 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade, are each probably at different levels.
Yes. And the software that we have really helps with that.
Okay, and see, so that makes it possible for you as the teacher then to really do a better job because you can respond to the individual's needs
exactly.
rather than the group's
yes.
situation.
And we might do some small grouping, and there might be times when we do a whole group activity or initial direct instruction, but that's very 10 or 15 minutes at the most because the most important thing in reading is for the child to be able to read.
Yes.
But when they are confronted with textbooks that are now written, middle school textbooks are written really up to a 1,200, 1,300, or 1,400 lexile, which is really a high school reading level. If they're reading at a 300 or 400,
yes.
they're going to become very frustrated reading those textbooks. So at least when they come to the literacy class, they know that they're going to get a book that may be interesting, their high interest motorcycles or whatever the topics are. But they'll be able to read it and be competent. And then they build on what they can do.
Okay. I was a social studies teacher, a high school social studies teacher, but I'm thinking of middle school social studies teachers. Are there books, say, on CDs or anything like that so that the kid can hear the book as well as read it so he or she doesn't have as much of a frustration problem?
We begin with System 44, which are all books on CD. They're very small, thin books, but of high interest, and they're all on CD. So the child looks at the print book while listening to the story.
So he gets it both ways.
He or she gets it both ways, and they start making the connection between what they hear. Many, especially people with dyslexia like my brother, many people are strong auditory learners and processors. But they haven't made the print connection.
Ah.
So those students, we want to help them make the print connection. And then they will eventually get out of those 33 little books and start moving on to other books that are not CD-based, though we do have them even in Read 180. So there are CDs they can listen to, and they track with their eyes. And it's not just a book like we listen to in the car, if you have a CD
yes.
player. But it's a book with a second voice. There's a narrator who reads the story. And then there's like, I'll call it teacher voice. It'll say, did you notice the word defendant on page 2? Do you know what a defendant is? And then they will explain some of the vocabulary that many of our students are also lacking.
So the computer program then approaches their learning in that way too.
The CDs do.
Yes,
these
okay.
are special CDs. The software will adjust. It's a dynamic program, and it does adjust. When they're taking a test, it'll adjust. It gets a little easier or a little bit harder, depending on right or wrong answers. There's also a special software that is somewhat diagnostic.
Uh-huh.
And I can get a printout, and I can find out if the students are missing many of the sight words that you and I take for common. So we can be somewhat diagnostic about what it is that they're missing and what areas I can work in.
So how did you learn all of that? In your master's program, was that?
No. This particular program is Scholastic, and we had excellent training. I went to several intensives, often in the summer for 4 or 5 days.
Oh, in service education from the school district.
And the school district paid for me, the Title I program paid
yes.
for me to go to that. Unfortunately, with the budget cuts, we don't go to as many, so we rely on the trainers that we have in the district or on each other if we're more familiar
yes.
with programs.
Okay. So I guess that's something for us to take note of as taxpayers in our school district, is budget cuts do affect people you in terms of the opportunities that you have to develop your skills further.
Right, and to understand the programs more deeply, and you have to have the teachers very well trained, especially as they begin the programs. You want what we call fidelity to the model. They're research-based. You want to be able to replicate the results over and over. And I've been doing that for 8 years since I started the program.
Okay.
The last 7, especially once I learned the programs.
Yes, exactly. Right. Wonderful. I'm thinking back to you said what there are 26 letters in the alphabet and 44 sounds in American English. I had never heard that before. So in British English, then would be different.
I'm sure they have more.
More
right,
different
sounds.
Because
they have a few more vowels they'll throw into, like the word color, C-O-L-O-U-R.
Exactly.
Or theater. It depends on how they pronounce it, and So, the Canadians would speak it differently than the British English, American English is the 44 sounds.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. So your youngest students at Mitchell Middle are sixth graders. What range of reading abilities do you see in these students? Now, how many sixth grade classes do you have? Just one or two?
Two of each grade right now, so 2 6th, 2 7th, 2 8th grade, and
uh-huh.
then in what they call an RTI response to intervention half-hour class that we're trying at Mitchell Middle this year in the middle schools. So I have two of each grade level, and 6th grade is the youngest.
Yes.
When I was at Gilmore for 2 years, I started their I had all sixth grade students, and another teacher had the seventh and eighth grade. And so I was able to service about five or six classes of sixth grade students. They are smaller classes because we have to do more individual instruction. So they're usually about 12.
To get them started then in terms of these programs.
And to meet their particular needs, yes.
How many people like yourself are there at Mitchell Middle then?
There's just one of me. There used to be two. There's one of me, a full-time Title I literacy teacher, and then another teacher who has one class.
Okay. Let's move on and talk about these sixth grade readers. Anything else? You commented on terms of where are they in terms of Lexiles and where do they need to be?
We have many students, unfortunately, that come in at beginning readers. They're BR, which means they are preschool. Now, even in kindergarten, students learn to read by the end of kindergarten.
Uh-huh.
So these are they're really pre-kindergarten or kindergarten-level readers.
Yes.
And then we work with them, and usually they make gains of 200 or 300 points. With the System 44 program, it's usually 300, 350 in a 9- or 10-month period. Uh-huh. And they should be able to finish the program in a year unless there's a learning disability of some sort or they may be dyslexic or other. Then it may take them more than 1 year to complete System 44. But normally it can be done in 1 year. Then they would move on at about a 400 Lexile to 600 Lexile. They would move into Read 180.
Yes.
And there we work more with fluency. But both programs stress spelling and clear academic language. So a lot of kids drop the endings. Like they might call me Miss Hawken instead of Hawkins. They might say they might pronounce my name Miss Hawking, which is correct. But most of the time, kids drop endings, and they slur their words. And so we have to get them to speak in academic language. If you say, ax your mama, instead of ask your mama, you're not hearing the sounds in ask. And, of course, ask is a base word for task and bask. And so if you don't hear it clearly, you're not going to be able to spell it clearly.
Yeah.
And you're not going to understand that this is an academic language. And, of course, we want all students to be able to use academic language.
Okay, and this involves then hearing then too.
Yes.
They not only do they need to read it and pronounce it, but they need to hear what they're saying so that they say it correctly.
Yes, and they every day students read into a microphone headset and they hear themselves. They have to listen to themselves reading a passage.
Ah,
and the idea is that once they hear the mistakes and then they hear it correctly, they can make those adjustments, and they do get better at spelling and at speaking.
Yeah. At the sixth grade level, the seventh grade level, the eighth grade level, what sort of percentages of kids master what they're supposed to at their those different levels? Does it get tougher as the kids get older or eighth grade as opposed to sixth grade or what?
Yes, unfortunately. That's why Racine and many school districts have started much earlier reading intervention programs at a preschool and kindergarten level.
Oh, really?
Yes. And we're hoping, I don't think I'll ever be out of business, but we're hoping that there'll be fewer students in Racine Unified once they've gotten the programs that they are getting now and they've been identified. So I would have maybe fewer students, or I would have students, because we have a very fluid population, that move maybe from Chicago or from Milwaukee to Racine. So there are students who may not have had those programs when they were young, and so this middle school program is an excellent one for helping them make the reading improvements. It's not a special ed program, though we do have some special ed students, but for the most part, it is for students they used to call gray area students that were two or three grade levels below. But we often get them five or six grade levels below.
Well, such a challenge then. What about do students then who speak another language, say, in the home, have special problems then in terms of learning to read English and that sort of thing? Or is that not an issue?
We sometimes have students, English as second language or English language learners, that are in our program. I don't think a lot of people understand that it takes 10 or 11 years to become really fluent in reading and writing in more than one language. Many of our students can speak another language,
yes,
but they may not have actually been educated academically in another language. If they can, they often can make those adjustments in reading and writing much faster if they've had a formal education, let's say in Spanish. But if they haven't, and it's all oral, because learning to speak is natural.
Yes.
Learning to read is not.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yes.
Say that again.
Learning to speak, you acquire that naturally.
Yes.
Learning to read is not acquired naturally. So students can learn to speak quite often and
yes.
use – teachers might even think that they understand English. They seem to be able to have conversations with them. But on an academic level, it takes many, many years. And so in our schools, we have bilingual or dual language programs
yes.
in both Spanish and English, for instance. Or they are programs that are ELL and helps that
English language
learners,
ELL.
They're really learning English in a classroom.
Okay.
But the teacher may understand Spanish to help that student with their English language learning. I don't have very many of those because they're working in those other classrooms
okay.
on some very basic skills. But I do have a few once they get, it's called access testing, once they're able to read and write well enough and speak in English, they might come into my classroom as a kind of tune-up.
Yes.
And so I have had some ESL or ELL students. Most of mine are native English, American English speakers.
Yeah. And thus, I think our listeners then can hear the challenges that teachers such as you have in terms of helping these kids learn to read, but not only the challenge that you have, but the regular classroom teacher has. And that makes me, I was a regular classroom teacher, high school teacher. So what can they do to promote student reading and comprehension in their classroom? What if I were teaching social studies at Mitchell Middle School? You know, and I don't have a reading background.
Well, one of the things I try to do as a literacy teacher, the other literacy teacher and I try to do is to network with our colleagues.
Okay.
And there are, through Lexile.com, Lexile.com online, you can find, if you know your child's or your Lexile level of reading, you can put that in, and you can also put in book titles and either ask for book titles that are within that Lexile
yes.
range, so it's comfortable reading, or you can put in book title to find out what level that book is, so it's not frustrational.
Yes.
And so any teacher can go to that site. They can also get a variety of materials, which is for we're being asked to differentiate in our classrooms for a student who reads way above grade level.
Yes.
They need to be challenged in their reading and writing. And a student that's really striving or struggling at, let's say, a 300 or 400 Lexile level, they need to be able to read as well. So you can go online and get articles. If you can't find books, you can get articles that are at that Lexile level.
Okay, so that means the teacher, though, has to spend some time,
you know,
chasing these things down and
yes.
that sort of thing. Well, and that gets to my argument for, or one of my favorite thoughts about K-12 public education, is I think teachers should be hired for the 12 months of the year and then given appropriate vacation, whatever. But there's so many things that they could and should be doing if they had the time to do that.
Yes. Well, time is of the essence, and I think most of us need a good break in the summer. I'm sure you would
yes,
give
I
us
just,
that.
Yeah.
But there's also the Jane School in the Racine Unified School District is an elementary year-round school, and they do have several weeks off in between their sessions. And that does keep the students learning all year long.
Yes.
And I think because, as you know, we were based, our education system is based in an agricultural society.
Yes.
Whether people are out harvesting cabbage for sauerkraut this time of year or
yes.
potatoes in Maine, it really was based on the seasons. And children were needed on the farms. So if they started school early, like in Maine where I used to live, they'd start in August,
mm-hmm.
but they were given the whole month of October off
yes.
to help get potato crops in. We don't have that situation anymore.
That doesn't fit our culture.
No, it doesn't fit the culture. And I think there are parents, some like the summer because they have grandparents or aunts or uncles or someone who can watch the kids. But many parents have to find childcare for 2-3 months of the year, and that's quite a burden on them.
Yes.
So I think year-round schooling may be the way we go because students forget things over the summer.
Okay. Our time is really moving fast here, so I want to go on to what should parents be doing to help their students become better readers during the school year, during the summer, whatever?
Well, I think my answer is going to surprise you. They need to model reading for their children. If the kids see the parents, mom, dad, grandma, uncle, reading anything from a newspaper to a car guide to a cookbook to a religious book like the Bible or Quran, if they see them actively reading, they will come to value reading. When they don't see their parents reading, and parents are pretty busy to just sit down and read.
Yes.
But in the course of cooking, whatever you're doing, if they see that, children will value it. Then the second thing I would say is to read to your children. Doesn't really matter what you're reading to them. It should be appropriate, of course. But you can be reading to a very young child from that same cookbook or from that women's magazine or from a men's sports section. And then as the kids get older, you might read with them books that are appropriate for them that they can also help read. So you read a page, they read a page.
Wonderful. You know, and that makes me think that as I was reading this morning's the Racine Journal Times, there were two articles in the Journal Times today about reading. This doctor's, the medical article, this parent was asking, my pediatrician has urged me to read with my toddler every day. Why? And where do I begin? And, of course, Dr. Kamaroff then answers that. And then kind of the advice columnist today, Harriet Cole, somebody was writing, asking her, I like to read, but I can't find any friends who like to read too and to discuss books and that sort of thing. All they do is watch TV.
Right, and now with Twitter and everything else, you can, on the TV shows, you can actually phone in or text a question or Twitter about that. There are still plenty of book clubs, and people can find them or start them. You only need another person to start discussing a book that you're interested in.
Sure.
And most adults, we have some book clubs in the school district, in schools, where kids can talk about a particular series. So the one that you come and read to us about Bluford, there have been some book clubs started. And the kids can talk about the characters who are usually in most of those books and about things that are happening in the Bluford books, for instance. So adults can do the same thing.
Does Lighted Schoolhouse then have book reading clubs or whatever?
Depends on what that particular teacher who volunteers to and is then paid, but they volunteer to do an after zone program in the middle schools. They might set up a book club,
but they could do that.
Yes, they could.
Mm-hmm. I know there was a teacher at Gerstead Middle School who had, I think, a noon hour kind of a book club for some of his, I think, social studies students or whatever.
Yes. So that's really up to each teacher.
And by the way, in terms of sources of books, I have mentioned Barnes & Noble and Goodwill and so forth. And I want to say the Racine Public Library.
Yes.
Inside the front door to the right, they've got a section. And the books, I think the paperbacks are normally 50 cents each. And there's a range of books there.
Yes, and there are plenty of sources and garage sales yet this time of year, lots of places to pick up books for very inexpensive or free at the library.
Right. Okay. At this time, then, I want to indicate then that this is Dwayne Olson, and you are listening to WGTD Education Matters on WGTD HD at 91.1 on your radio dial, Kenosha Gateway Technical College. Today I'm visiting with Ms. Lucy Hocking, a Title I reading and literacy teacher at Mitchell Middle School in the Racine Unified School District. And now back to our program. And we have about 15 minutes left, so we're going to have to cover some things here, and I think we're going to have to ignore some other things. Well,
One of the things that I asked you about is today's teachers and administrators in Wisconsin have to have a professional development plan, a PDP, that's reviewed by a committee. What are you focusing on in your PDP? What is it you're trying to do then as a teacher that goes beyond what you do in the classroom and that sort of thing? It really, I guess, in service education.
Well, I appreciate being here, and I'm glad you asked me that question because I've combined my two licenses, my elementary ed with my reading teacher master's. So I only have to do one PDP, but I have to cover a couple of areas. And one of the teacher standards, number 10, which is teachers are connected with other teachers in the community. The teacher fosters relationships with school colleagues, parents, and agencies in the larger community, support pupil learning and well-being, and acts with integrity, fairness, and in an ethical manner. So I'm happy to be on this program because it actually helps me meet one of my goals at this number 10 standard by being here and talking about these issues on Education Matters. And so I'm happy to do that. I'm also networking with my colleagues. As I said, I'm teaching most of the day, but the other literacy teacher and I will send articles that we find. If there's webinars that we become notified about, we share with our colleagues. We share materials. We share ideas. Might be a teacher who's a 6 through 12 trained teacher in social studies or science,
yes,
but was not trained specifically in reading. So I might share Lexile.com, and if I can help him or her find some articles that they could photocopy and use in their classroom, I would do that to help them. So any way that I can be of service. New teachers may not understand the MAP, Measure of Academic Progress, testing that we use.
Yes.
And I would help explain that. And on that test, if the parents get the student progress report that's printed out, has both the math and the reading, under that, at the bottom, it will show their student's Lexile range, usually within about 100 points of a test that I administer.
Yes.
And so parents can see it. Yeah, they have to look for it because the MAP RIT score is based on a gentleman, doctor named Rausch. That score is not the same as a Lexile. So they might have a 214 RIT score in as a seventh grader, which is about grade level. And then they should have between probably a 800 and 950 range, Lexile range. And that's more easy to tell a librarian, for instance, that your child is reading at about 800 Lexile. So that's a good way. And by educating the public about this and how they can match up books, I can help parents and even other educators find the right materials for their students.
So really, then, people like you are a resource then to your fellow teachers in your building and your school district in terms of helping kids to read.
I try to be, yes.
That's really wonderful because, you know, people like me without with a very limited background or no background then need these resources. Now, teacher ed programs today, at least at Parkside, our secondary people did have two reading courses, so that it's much different than when I was prepared centuries ago.
Centuries ago.
Okay. I want to go to the idea of could you use tutors in your classroom or at Mitchell School, and what might they do, and if people are interested, who should they contact? I think that's very important for our listeners to know about.
We have, I would love to have more volunteers. I have a couple right now, including I have a student who it's part of her UW Parkside teacher education. She's a field student, and she comes every morning for my first hour class.
Wonderful.
And she just does everything and anything that I need her to do, most importantly because she's very young. She's quite pretty. And the kids really like having young students.
Relate to her.
Since I'm not that young, they can relate to her,
yes,
and they really enjoy her stories. We can also use adults, and they have to fill out it's called WINGS, W-I-N-G-S, the RUSD, the Racine Unified Application to Volunteer. Only has to be filled out every 2 years. If somebody would have one for, let's say, a grandchild at an elementary school, then that could serve in my classroom in the middle school. And even an hour a week, if somebody made a commitment and I can match them up with a student or with several students, and they took turns reading or just showed interest, that would make a great difference to many of our students, because they often don't have a lot of our students don't have dads, or they don't have parents at home. They're working several jobs.
And yes.
They live with aunts or uncles or grandparents. So they could use just the attention of one adult and make a huge difference.
Exactly. And it makes me think about this student education student from UW Parkside that you have in your classroom first period every day. I think that illustrates then how different then teacher education is today than it was back in my day, because students are, pre-service teachers are getting these opportunities to deal with real kids in real classrooms with real teachers, et cetera.
Yes, and I have had several from UW Parkside, all wonderful, wonderful. Mm. They were, happened to be young women, but several of them made the decision that they thought maybe they weren't meant for middle school. And one loved it, and she now wants to pursue being a middle school teacher, whereas she initially came in thinking that she wanted just younger elementary students. So the field work, like I'm an Alverno grad, and we had field placements our very first year onward,
yes.
And Parkside's doing that now too. So you get to really see what a real classroom's like, and you can find it's really a calling. Sometimes it's a calling to high school, and sometimes it's a preschool. I could never do a classroom full of little ones. And I love teaching middle school, and that's my calling.
And sometimes it's a calling not to teach at all.
Yes.
Because I did a little study one time at Parkside and found out that after that first contact with kids, 20% of the students never went on to another education class. And then the next year, or the next time around, another 13%. So a third then just simply didn't continue. But that's good, too.
Yes.
Good for the student, the education, pre-education student, and also good for the kids in the classrooms, because they don't get teachers who dislike what teachers do.
Right. And you also, when you start teaching, in the first 5 years, there's a tremendous turnover. And there are many teachers leaving the profession in the first couple of years because they don't like teaching. So if they have more field experience, I think we'll have more, like what UW and Alverno and other education programs offer, you'll have more people staying with the program.
Okay, our time is really moving quickly, so I want to jump to another question ask you. A couple years ago, you received a grant from the Kids First Fund to provide a book for summer reading to every student at Mitchell. What was your thinking behind that project?
Well, a lot of the students, you ask, how could a student be 4 or 5 years behind in reading when they're in 7th and 8th grade? How did that happen? Well, if during the summer students do not touch a book all summer, they do nothing academic, they do not go to summer school, and they enjoy their summer, but they have no learning going on, they often slide, they lose, estimates are between 2 and 3 months' worth of their learning.
Ah.
And over time, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years of summers, they could have lost 4 or 5 years of school of reading skills. During the school year, those children learn at about the same rate as the other children. It's just that they lose. They do a summer slide, and it's not the fun kind, and they go backwards.
Yes.
So it is very difficult, even as a reading teacher, if I can get them 2 or 3 years above where they were. So they aren't yet at grade level, but they've made great improvement. And then the next summer after our program, they don't touch a book and they don't go to summer
yes.
school. Then they often will regress 2 or 3 months, not 2 or 3 years, but 2 or 3 months.
So how successful was your project? I mean, kids really ran?
Thanks, yes. At 5 of the schools for 5 years, the Kids First Grants provided a new book, one of the Bluford books, because they were only $1 each, but they were good books.
Uh-huh.
And the kids had them over the summer. Each grade level, 6th, 7th, and 8th, got a different book so they could swap with their brothers and sisters or with their friends. And they could potentially read one book a month or 3 books over the summer. And that is enough to help keep the summer slide from happening.
Okay, that's really great. You know, and another thing I want to mention here is not too long ago I read some research about Sesame Street and kids who had Sesame Street and the opportunity to view that program on a regular basis. It was equal then to having gone to kindergarten.
Yes, a preschool program. Yes, I heard that too.
And
yes.
And so that's what really would be good in terms of getting kids started then. So that's like one thing parents can do is make sure their young children see Sesame Street.
Watch Sesame Street, yes. And more importantly, that they see the parent reading and a parent reads to them. Because it's really the voice and it's that interaction that's important.
Okay. And here we're getting closer to the end. Here's a question I haven't used recently. But if you were to receive a grant of $1,500 to be used for reading at Mitchell Middle School during the school year and or the following summer, how would you invest that money with your kids?
I applied for a grant that was for a different program, and I didn't receive that grant.
Uh-huh.
Other colleagues did. But I would do it again because the books are now $2 a piece through Townsend Press. I would buy another set because they have about 20 different titles, so I'd buy another set of three different books and give every child at Mitchell Middle School a new book for the summer. And again, maybe they would swap them out and have read three books by the end of summer, which would keep them from backsliding to doing the summer slide.
Oh, and that's
one
of the
things. That's why I would do it. Yeah.
That's one of the things you pointed out from your previous experience, that many of the kids did indeed trade their books.
Yes, they did. They swapped in the and now those books are still rolling around, whether it's a school or somebody's closet. Parents remarked that they had read the book because it's an engaging book. It's at about 800 lexile, but parents even enjoyed the book. When I started them, I read all 20 straight through.
And that one of the things about it is the books that you have from Bluford then are really dealing with kind of contemporary social issues.
Yes, sir.
And thus are attractive to the students.
Yes, but they're not graphic. They're not a lot of visuals. They are free audiobooks also for Bluford at Bluford.com.
Okay.
Free audiobook downloads.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah, would you repeat that website for Bluford? Because
it's at bluefordbooks.com, and it's a free audiobook download of all 20 of their titles.
And Bluford,
you can listen to it.
It's B-L-U without the E.
Yes, B-L-U-F-O-R-D, books.com. Yes.
Okay, that's really wonderful. So our radio audience, we say thank you for being with us today as we visit with Ms. Lucy Hocking, a Title I reading and literacy teacher at Mitchell Middle School in the Racine Unified School District. What you are doing is incredibly important to your students and thus to their families and ultimately to our society. So thank you, Mrs. Hocking, for all you do for our students.
And thank you, Duane.
You're most welcome. If you'd like to hear this or a previous Education Matters program, go to WGTD's website, www.wgtd.org, and click on Talk at the top of your screen. Scroll down to Education Matters and click on to learn more, and there you're there. Finally, tune in next Saturday at 10:30 a.m. for another edition of Education Matters. This is your host, Duane Olson, thanking you for being with us today.
Matters heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. It's 11:13. This is WGTD. I'm David Cole. Some breaking news to report this morning. Two young children are dead, and a woman was hauled off in handcuffs following an early morning incident in the Wilson neighborhood on Kenosha's Near North Side. A brief news release from the police department only says that a death investigation is underway and that a woman was taken to a local hospital. The deaths occurred in the lower level of a duplex near the intersection of 33rd Avenue and 50th Street, about a block from Wilson Elementary. Police were called just after 3 this morning. A neighbor who lives next door says he was awakened by a commotion of some sort and then saw officers running up.
They woke me up. My bedroom window's right outside from where that's at, and I heard noise. Then I got up and looked out the window, and I seen cops come running up. So I did hear something before the cops got here, but I couldn't understand what it was, you know.
The man, who declined to identify himself, said he believed that a man and a woman lived in the apartment. A number of children would come and go regularly, leading him to believe that the tenants were engaged in some type of child care. The man said there'd been no prior problems.
They keep to themselves. I know they have parties over there for their kids. They have birthday parties, stuff like that. I see them all the time, you know. They keep to themselves. They're good people.
For updates on the story throughout the day, when they become available, log on to or like WGTD's Facebook page. Again, two young children are dead and a woman was hauled off in handcuffs following an early morning incident in the Wilson neighborhood on Kenosha's Near North Side.